All lines are now bridged.
Great, thank you very much, and good morning, everybody. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and I'd like to welcome everybody back to the U.S. CDI Task Force. We hope you've enjoyed your few weeks off for our Task Force members, but we're glad to have you. Let's get started with roll call today, and I'll start with our co-chair, Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Leslie Kelly Hall, our other co-chair, is taking the day off, and she will be back with us next time. Ricky Bloomfield. Hans Bootendijk.
Good morning.
Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Jim Georges. Ken Kawamoto. John Kilborn.
Good morning.
Leslie Leonard.
Good morning.
Glenn McDonald. Aaron Meary.
Good morning.
Brett Oliver.
Hi, good morning.
Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber. Abby Sears. Sasha Termont.
Good morning.
Andrew Truscott. Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
Daniel Riemann. And Denise Webb.
Good morning.
Good morning to all, and thank you so much. And I'll now turn it over to our co-chair, Stephen Lane, to get us started. Stephen?
Thank you so much, and thank you, everyone, for returning to the scene of the crime here for our task force meeting today. We have a number of members of the public with us on the line, and I want to welcome all of you as well and encourage you to participate in the online chat and public comments, as well as taking advantage of our opportunity for public comment, which we open 5 minutes before the end of our allotted time. I apologize that once again my camera isn't working today, despite reloading the app, so we'll just have to go with audio. I don't know if anyone else is sharing cameras, but if you are, I can't see you. So I'm very excited to be here with you today to hear Al and perhaps others inform us about the process and outcomes related to the finalization and publication of USCDI version 2, which came out on July 9th. It came out just as I was going off the grid, but I was able to take a look at it and subsequently talk with Al about it. So really, really excited to discuss that with all of you today, as ONC, I think, really took to heart a lot of the input that our task force provided through our Task 1 and Task 2 efforts, and I think that this will inform our work as we continue on with Task 3. Past meeting notes have again been posted to the web and should be there for all of your enjoyment. What we're going to do primarily today is talk about version 2, give Al a chance to talk about the process that ONC went through to review public and high-tech input, the final decision-making, hopefully give us a pretty clear sense of which of our recommendations were incorporated and which might have been passed over, and perhaps a little bit of why related to the latter, if that's appropriate. And I think that will, and also most of our tasks, two recommendations, that is to say, the recommendations regarding the on-deck process and how to best support a broad population of commenters and submitters, a lot of that work is yet to be done, but Al will share with us how the ONC is approaching that, which of those recommendations might be easier to implement and which might take longer time. Dealing with the Paperwork Reduction Act, et cetera. So, as we have time available at the end, we can come back to our work towards our task three efforts. And then we have, you will see, put a couple of additional meetings on the calendar. You should have received those meeting invites. Looking through the rest of our time together, finishing up our recommendations to the HITECH, which we'll be submitting in early September, our last set of those. So the work time that we have together through the rest of this month and next. So that's how we're going to be spending our time this morning. I see that Abby's coming. Welcome, Abby. As others join, we will welcome them as well. Any questions or comments about the agenda before we dive in? I don't see any hands raised. So, Al, can we have the team pull up your slides, and you can tell us a bit about version 2.
Great. Thanks, Stephen, and thanks for the opportunity to present. We're excited. I think we're excited as everyone else about being able to put out USCDI version 2. It's been a long time coming, and we had a lot of input, especially from this task force, but a very large amount of public input into crafting this new version 2. Next slide. One of the things that we wanted to clarify is just the general core principles, and these are, we've gone over this before, but one thing to keep in mind, that the USCDI is really a core set. And we went back to this term, this core set, numerous times as we considered what are we going to add and what might we not be able to add. It is a core set of patient data. It's not an all-inclusive set of data, health data, but rather the core set. We established it as a consistent baseline, and we did that so that even if the content of USCDI did not meet a particular user's, all of the particular user's needs, it at least set a bar at a certain point so that everybody knew what's in there. It's a consistent baseline, a consistent set that everybody knows as the reference. And where there are additional needs, those can be addressed separately, either by submitting those for addition in future versions or just meeting those additional data needs in other ways. We also felt like this process that we have been using is very important to give everybody's to set everybody's expectations about how USCDI is going to change over time. Hang on a second, I just lost my. Sorry, I just lost my screen. We wanted to make sure that this process was very transparent, and so everybody knew what happened, what happens, what's going to happen, and why, so that everybody could participate in a meaningful way going forward. Next slide. So this is it. This is USCDI version 2. The little yellow stars indicate new data elements or new data classes compared to USCDI version 1. It's not a big change. We added 22 new data elements across three new data classes rather, and we removed four data elements by expanding the care team member into its components, these five components that you see on the left. And so we can keep going back to this, but this is just a high-level intro to the changes that we made for USCDI version 2. Next slide. To dig into the specific changes that we made, we made an effort to specifically address health equity concerns and how health data can address those things. And this is in line with the new administration's changes in priorities. We added the two major new changes is that we added sexual orientation and gender identity data elements to the demographics data class, as well as we added four new data elements related to social determinants of health, those being assessment goals, problems and health concerns, and interventions. And those are as identified by the gravity project's submissions for USCDI. Next slide. And then by adding additional data classes and data elements other than those six that in SOGI and SDOH, we felt like these new data elements and data classes does support broader health data interoperability by defining a more complete set of data that needs to be exchanged. Next slide. So digging into the individual additions, these are the SOGI data elements we use for applicable vocabulary standards. We use the same ones that we use for our demographics criteria, or the A5 criteria for certification. And so this is the same value set that we use for that. And so there's no change in the vocabulary that needs to be used for exchange compared to use and access of those data elements. Then that's true for both sexual orientation and gender identity. Next slide. The new data elements, the new SDOH data elements, the original submission had SDOH as its separate data class, and as we pointed out on a couple of different occasions, those data elements were similar to data elements that were in other data classes. And so, we recognize that those are similar or the same, using the same codes as. Using the same codes that are used for other, so for example, SDOH goals uses the same set of codes as can be used for other generic patient goals, we instead of adding them to a separate SDOH data class, we incorporated these data elements into their respective appropriate data classes, as you see here, and as you can see on the sort of the high level slide, those are now added to these existing data classes. We did not add it to a separate data class. And for SDOH assessment and goals, ONC did not state an applicable standard for the baseline data elements. That is assessment and plan of treatment, as well as goals. We don't have an applicable standard because there is so much flexibility or so much variability in how those are represented. With the SDOH data elements, however, because the Gravity Project has defined the applicable standards for use to represent those specific SDOH data elements. We did add these vocabulary sets as applicable vocabulary standards. Gravity is in the process of defining value sets that are subsets of these vocabulary sets. Those have yet to be published, but when they do, those will be there as guidance toward how to conform to each of these data elements. So using a subset or a value set of low-income SNOMED codes to represent SDOH assessments, we can point to the value sets as a guide to how to conform to those codes required for that. And so these are the applicable standards for these SDOH data elements. Next slide. So care team members was an existing data class. We had a single generic data element for care team members. And what we ended up doing is removing that data element, but replacing it with five different data elements that represent different components of a care team member. We had, as most recall, provider information was a new group of data elements that we wanted to add. And there was a lot of input in particular from the HITECH or the task force that the provider information should apply to all care team members and not just the credentialed medical provider for a particular patient. And so we not only added additional provider data elements, but we expanded the scope of those data elements to apply to all of the care team members. Care team member identifier is one where it might only be applicable for actual credentialed providers, but we felt like that where it was not appropriate to have a care team member identifier for somebody like a family member, a caregiver, a custodian, then an identifier wouldn't be needed for that particular one. But the capability to capture an identifier of some sort as appropriate was one of the added ones. And so we added name, identifier, role, location, and telecom to the care team members data class.
Al?
Yes.
This is Stephen. If I can just kind of jump in with a question here. So for care team member role, there's really no applicable value set, correct? That this is just meant to be a pretext field, or you could stick whatever value in there that you wanted, but there's no, it's not specified beyond just naming it as a data element. Is that correct?
It's yes and no. It's not specified. So for USCDI, the applicable vocabulary standard is not specified. And the reason we did that is we identified two different value sets that have yet to be reconciled. Those are value sets that apply to FHIR US Core provider role and the CCDA, forget the exact term, but the CCDA provider role value set is different. And those two, there's that's well known that there are differences in those value sets. And because we couldn't, if we picked one of those two different value sets for USCDI, we basically break conformance to the other value set used in the CCDA templates. And so we removed the single the value set, but in order to represent care team member or provider role in either US Core or CCDA, that is the appropriate value set that needs to be used. And so consistent with our pattern of making sure that the bar is not higher in USCDI than it is for either or both of the exchange formats, we just removed the vocabulary standard.
When we get there, it'll be interesting to hear Sasha and Hans comment from a EHRA or EHR vendor perspective as to how difficult or easy it will be to manage that kind of flexibility. I had another question about location. Did you specify in the documentation that this is the physical location of the provider, you know, at the time of the encounter versus, you know, where they get their mail or what their usual office is? Certainly a lot of providers move around, or is this sort of left open-ended at this point?
We left it open-ended because, you know, depending on how you're using that data element, you might need it to represent something different. Like you said, at the time of care, you know, business address, it could be a number of things. So, you know, and that could apply both to providers as well as, you know, family members and custodians. They might have different locations depending on what the need is.
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt, but just thought.
No, that's good. Thanks for the clarification. Because we did. We actually, for a time, we were considering a particular value set for some of these and realized that we did some research and realized that we needed to sort of back off on some of these. Next slide, please. So this is a new data class. It used to be called diagnostic studies and results, I think was the term that was originally submitted. And we had a lot of discussion about what this ought to be, what it ought to represent. But as with its original name, it represents tests that are not imaging or lab tests. And that's kind of the short version of what clinical test represents. We gave some examples, not an exhaustive set of examples of different tests that don't qualify as a imaging or lab test, and that are, you know, valuable pieces of information that previously didn't have representation in the USCDI, but we felt like that was a significant gap in USCDI. And so following the pattern that we have for laboratory, where we use laboratory test and laboratory result, diagnostic imaging, which we'll talk about in a second, both the test and the result, we did the same thing for clinical test. And so we have the name and the code for the test, as well as the results. And as with the other exam or test data elements, we wanted to make sure that included both the structured, where it's available, and unstructured or narrative components as part of the result or report. Next slide. We also added diagnostic imaging as a data class and specified that the data class that we added or improved the definition of the data class to include all visual images. And then we gave examples of how those images, examples of what the reports on those images would result in. One of the comments, and this applies to laboratory, which we'll cover in a second, there were three clinical notes data elements that we proposed to move into these two the diagnostic imaging laboratory data classes. And the feedback that we got pretty consistently, which we sort of expected, is that the content of the imaging narrative is often or almost always contained within the report itself, the report being oftentimes entirely narrative, although there are some structured components to imaging reports that could be communicated in structured ways instead of narrative ways. So aligned with the recommendations from the task force, we removed the data element imaging narrative and incorporated the content in the diagnostic imaging report. So to specify both structured and unstructured data would be included in that imaging report. Question from Grace.
I just wanted to clarify that diagnostic imaging doesn't include actual images from radiology or if there's digital pathology, whole slide images.
Correct. We did not add images, the images itself. This has been an ongoing discussion about the feasibility of adding the requirement for images, but we have not yet we have not added the image itself, Grace.
Thank you.
And when we do, Al, that will be a new data element within this data class, or potentially within another data class, as Grace mentioned, pathology. Correct.
I would expect that, yeah. And so it would be so potentially, yeah. There could be an imaging. The image file or image itself. Yes.
Right. So again, that's obviously something that as you say has been discussed by many people and many venues. And if our task force felt strongly that version 3 was the time to start including image files, that would be something we'd want to talk about here over the next 6 weeks.
Or any time in the future, yeah. So whether that was Yeah, because the submissions, I can't recall if the submission, we've already had a submission for image file itself, but there has been some, we have gotten some feedback that there's some interest in having the file. Clearly there's an impact on there's a significant impact on adding that capability to USCDI or to EHRs in general, whether it's by this or other criteria.
Al, there's a question in the public comment from Patrice regarding whether we considered NUCC. Can you comment on that?
Sure. That was actually one of the reason that we did consider NUCC as a taxonomy, but the looking into the there were some concerns raised by other some of our technical experts that we consulted, but since we expanded the scope of provider identifier to include all care team members, we didn't, and NUCC does not have non-clinical specialty elements. So custodian, family member, et cetera, are not represented by NUCC. And so we removed that because we expanded the scope.
Thank you.
And Clem has a question. Clem?
Yeah, well, it's a question or comment. firstly, you know, FHIR does include images as sort of attachments, so it's fairly simple connection to imaging reports. But what I wanted to point out, asked about, you've got applicable vocabulary standards, and ISA includes all of them as blanks. And I don't know where the blanks come from. That is, it looks like you pulled them out of ISA because that's the title they use, applicable vocabulary standards.
Or, sorry,
for diagnostic imaging reports, for clinical report notes, and for the other diagnostic studies like EKGs and
tonometers. You're talking about the result codes.
Well, I'm talking about the code for the applicable vocabulary standards, which you've got a column for. So you've got it for line 2.70. And I don't know, maybe I understand the difference now, how it did between the test and the report.
So the difference is that how to represent the test itself, the test performed without a result necessarily attached to it. There are lowing codes for the diagnostic imaging tests or panels. And the reports can sometimes be represented by lowing, sometimes SNOMED. And in the case of labs, can be represented by the labs and vital signs, for example, can be represented by low ink as well as UCM. There are a lot of different options about how to represent different reports.
Yeah, but you've got to clarify, UCM doesn't represent the report or the test. It represents the units of the test in the record for the observation. And I think it would be a big problem if you randomly have different kinds of code systems identifying tests, that people won't know which ones to look for, what names to search on.
Okay,
thanks.
So next slide, please. We added the new data class encounter information. We originally had, I think that we had these first three as the data elements that we proposed for draft V2, and we added, based on recommendations from the task force as well as others, these new data elements of location and disposition. We had a lot of discussion about whether or not disposition, there is a disposition code set, there were some concerns about how broadly applicable that particular code set was to both inpatient and outpatient systems, and so we removed the applicable vocabulary standard from encounter disposition. But the other the other data elements, as seen here, are new data elements. We did add a, so one of the comments that, or one of the recommendations that the task force made was adding some clarity around encounter time. And so we added this, we added the data element definition to really be more encompassing of different ways in which encounter time might need to be represented. So both scheduled arrival and start and stop times are different options about how to represent time associated with an encounter. And so we added that and added the flexible, some flexibility in the examples.
Thank you. Hans's hand is up.
Thank you. Quick question here, and it's actually a place for a good example. In the publication, when you go to the page, there is also a link to the submission. And in this particular case, you see that the encounter diagnosis does not have quite a definition to it, but encounter time and the other ones do. So that creates a question when you read it, whether the definition is in accordance with the submission or not. And in some cases, there is also a submission listed and there is a definition. It would be very helpful that on the main page, there are actually definitions for everything as to what actually was adopted, and that the submissions are great context and backdrop, but it gets confusing as to when to go where for what definition to understand the scope.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, Hans. In some cases, the submissions identified some more breadth in the scope of what a particular data element ought to cover. And so sometimes we took the submission and made some changes to it to make it either more broadly or more narrowly applicable. And so the submissions, it's good context for the submissions, and the submission information that's available on the website is there. And all it really is this is what was submitted. And we took that information, took feedback from the public, and in some cases made some changes to it. So we need to be trying to figure out a good way to manage that, especially when there's differences in the submitted definition or the submitted scope and what we ended up adopting. So we'll take that, definitely take that and see what we can do with it.
Thank you.
All right. Next slide, please.
Actually, Al, before you go on, I just want to acknowledge that Dan, Clem, Jim, and Michelle all joined us. And I hope that after your presentation, we'll have a chance to hear from Michelle about how she and CMS feel about the additions that you made, some of which were, clearly in response to their requests and submissions.
Okay. Okay. So then the next data class is laboratory. We kept the two existing data elements, test and values and results, made a few changes to the definitions for both. In particular, the values and results data element we changed to incorporate to make sure that it's clear that the narrative components are part of a value and results, allowing us to remove the laboratory report and path report narrative data elements because their content is incorporated into values and results. Exactly the same as with diagnostic imaging. So we did that. Questions about that before we move on?
I still know the word result is an ambiguous term. Many people think of it as being the whole observation record. Values, it's the value of the test. And so I don't have a good suggestion, but it needs something more, maybe an example of what you mean by the two. I think what you mean is that if it's a VRDL test, reactive, non-reactive is one of the values. If it's a glucose test, 120 is a value. But in general, word results doesn't really narrow the space very well.
I think, Clem, your point's well taken, the idea of asking for examples. I think we've heard that numerous times from commentators, that examples are very helpful in clarifying the meaning.
So, yeah, we definitely can look at that. I think that, in general, the particular category or the particular data class of laboratory is less ambiguous about what do we mean when we say lab test and lab result. That's my impression.
The structures are exactly parallel in terms of V2 and FHIR, whether it's an X-ray, an EKG, or whatever. So I think if you got some examples in, and they fit together, the same stuff fit, EKG results, they all fit, the actual numeric results fit just like a lab does. I'm not saying it's a lab test, but just I don't think it's that ambiguous, and examples would help.
Okay. Well, thanks for that comment, Clem. Anybody else?
Sasha commented that she also thinks examples are helpful.
Okay. And I guess my question back to Sasha and Clem is sort of some feedback on, like, which exact terms are ambiguous that would benefit from examples. I don't have to answer the question now, but we'd love to hear some feedback on where thoughts are, where some of these terms might be ambiguous. I'm not sure that lab results is an ambiguous term, but if you feel like it is or others are, just please let us know.
It is, because there are two pieces, at least, to a result. You got to say what the test is, and that may be what you're calling or thinking as a test. And then you got to say what the result of the value, and then the result and value is, some results are sometimes the whole report in many people's mind. You got to say what the value of that measurement was or that test was. And that's why they say the test is like glucose and the value is 120. That would help a lot. Or the test is some categorical test, and the value is reactive or present or not present. That would help a lot. But I'd be happy to go through this set of slides and make specific suggestions if that would be helpful.
Sure. That'd be great.
Sasha,
you still have your hand up?
I was just going to say that the main place that I had been heavily relying on the examples in the certification test data was for assessment and plan, which I know we've talked about in this work group as being quite vague. And, you know, when I poll Epic users on what they consider the assessment and plan, I get a wide variety of answers. And so kind of it was useful to glean as much as was feasible from the certification test data, sort of what of these ideas, you know, what types of data was ONC envisioning as the assessment and plan, and how would that be different from parts of a progress note, or trying to kind of understand, especially where, you know, we have a data element that is, I guess I might say ambiguous, you might say flexible. But in those cases, I think sort of getting that insight into the intention is helpful.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. So if we can go back to, we did that, so we don't have to go all the way back, but we did that for the SDOH assessment. We did provide some more specific examples, and that would be, you know, that would be translated into the CCG, the certification guide, or other guidance that we provide for that. But your point about the more generic assessment and plan of treatment, you know, needing examples or benefiting from examples is a good one. So thanks. Okay. So let's move on to the next slide, please. There's a number of changes that we added to the problems data class. First of all, we added I think we talked about this in the original slide, on SDOH. Not only, well, a couple of things. Starting from the top, we added ICD-10 as one of the applicable standards for representing problems. Lots of feedback, long-term discussion about the appropriateness of doing this. And given the weight of all the feedback, we did incorporate ICD-10 as an option for problems. And so that will provide some clarity on exactly what does implementation look like of this, but systems will be required to represent either SNOMED or ICD-10 for problems. And I think that fits very well into current practice, long-standing current practice for representing problems. The SDOH problems and health concerns similarly uses the same set of codes, although the Gravity project is working on more narrow value sets within SNOMED and ICD-10 to represent SDOH problems. And then the two timing elements of problems, date of diagnosis and date of resolution, are there. We added some clarifying, what at least I think are clarifying definitions for these, and added those data elements to problems.
Al, I just want to comment, as the original submitter of those particular data elements and the participant in a number of fairly broad stakeholder discussions about how they needed clarification. I appreciate the work you guys did on clarifying the meaning of those terms. I think, obviously people will quibble, but it's good to have that there. There again, I'll be interested, perhaps when we get to more discussion, to hear from vendor representatives as to how they feel about these and whether they feel that it's going to be particularly challenging to implement them.
Yep. Okay. Next slide. This is a little bit more, just more of a broad term. So those are all of the new data elements, the removed data elements, and the changed data elements. We, part of USCDI V2, as expected, we updated the applicable standards to the most current versions of these vocabulary standards to these most current ones. Some of these, like RxNorm and NDC Linker, CVX, are updated very, very frequently. And so even like at the time of publication, I think we have a new RxNorm since this, but systems are always able to update to more recent versions. But for USCDI, we set the bar at these dated standard versions. Next slide. So now that USCDI version 2 is final, ONC will consider adding, next slide. We will consider adding USCDI version 2 as an approved standard version for which will allow developers to update systems for these new standards. USCDI being one of them, there are others that are under consideration, and we are now in the open comment period for which standards versions ought to be considered for SVAP. I think we're getting ready to publish a blog inviting people to not only submit USCDI version 3 data elements for consideration, as well as commenting on whether or not USCDI version 2 ought to be incorporated into the SVAP process. Hans has his hand up. Hans.
Al, just one question here, and that you may not be able to answer that, and it's just for awareness as we go into SVAP process. It's slightly outside USCDI in a way, but USCDI is to be supported by FHIR, US Core, and CCDA. Is the direction of thought that the USCDI version 2 would be introduced in SVAP, and that it then would be used with existing versions in certification, or that USCDI V2 would be coupled to newer versions that would accommodate some of the variances between version 1 and 2 that are in play, and then only it's applicable to new versions of US Core and CCDA. And again, it might be it's likely a too early question, but just to raise that would be a likely question that will come up from a clarity perspective. If USCDI V2 is mentioned separately in SFAP, what does that mean in context of using it with existing standards versions or with new standard versions?
We would, okay, really good question. A lot of moving parts to the question. I don't think I can answer all of them right now, but it's good to bring up. So adopting sort of updated system to USCDI version 2 could have some implications on what, you know, does US Core would have to update to accommodate version 2, and then would you use the updated version of US Core to accommodate USCDI version 2. And the same thing for CCDA, I think, is what your question is. And we expect that U.S. Core and CCDA would make progress towards updating to accommodate USCDI version 2 where needed. And so, like, for example, for SOGI and SDOH, we expect changes will be underway to accommodate that in updates to US Core. And so we're not the ones that set the pace for that, but we do say that so that in order to implement USCDI version 2, you would have to implement something. You would have to implement an updated US Core in order to be able to handle the new USCDI V2 data elements. Is that kind of answering your question, at least part of it?
Certainly part of it. And I fully understand that this is too early right now, but just want to bring it up that that's where USCDI V2 will have some impacts on how it's being referenced as FAB.
Yeah. And we've been working with HL7 and just for their awareness to sort of let them know where the puck is moving to. If you like the hockey reference, so they're aware that those changes would need to be made, and then, you know, work will begin or has begun on doing it. Okay. And next slide.
Could I just make a comment? I got my hand up, but.
Okay.
So it's just not clear. When you're talking about U.S. Core, you're talking about the FHIR U.S. Core?
Yes.
Okay, the second thing is that I thought USCDI always applied to all the three versions of HL7, CCDA, FHIR, and V2. Is that still correct assumption?
Well, USCDI is for the cert criteria that require USCDI, there are some. There's, I think, 7 criteria that specifically invoke USCDI. I'm not 100% sure if USCDI is invoked by V2, but I think it is for public health reporting, but at least parts of USCDI. So it would apply the updating one of those criteria to accommodate USCDI version 2.
My last comment was that Core FHIR actually is anticipated some of these things. They're ahead of it in terms of the clinical stuff, I think. But I'll double check on that too. Thank you.
Yeah, they're making changes sometimes in response to changes in USCDI, sometimes in response to other things. As Brett Marquardt had described here on this call a few months ago, it's a leapfrog sort of thing where they're making advances, and sometimes USCDI makes advances that they have to respond to.
Yeah, it's a mix of both right now. It's that in some areas they're ahead, some areas, a couple of areas they're behind on the UCDI V2.
Right.
And UCDI V1 is referenced in a number of places, but it's really only CCDA and US Core that you need to use to demonstrate the use of UCDI. And then in public health, it is a case reporting requirement, but there's no other standard attached to it in terms of V2 or anything else.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. That's sometimes hard to keep track of.
Yeah, they're quite intricate here and there.
Okay. So let's move on to the version 3 process. Unless you want to stop and ask, do you want to, Stephen, do you want to talk about V2 now and then move on to the V3 process?
Yeah, I think we should. I raised a couple of questions earlier, specifically to, you know, our vendor representatives, both of whom have had a chance to speak, but I didn't know if there was anything more that they wanted to offer, especially regarding sort of date of diagnosis, date of resolution, and then also to Michelle, you know, for the CMS perspective on how V2 sort of managed their requests. So I'd love to hear back, and then I also, there's a couple of, Mark also has his hand up. So I don't know, maybe since Mark was so good as to use the hand raising, you want to go first, Mark?
Thanks. I didn't jump in at the particular page, and maybe I should have, but I just want to voice great appreciation for the inclusion of the SDOH data elements and sexual orientation and gender identity to advance health equity. Won't take the time on this call, but those are huge additions, and I just want to say thank you.
Thanks, Mark. I couldn't agree more. And then, Michelle, you were kind enough to raise your hand, so maybe I'll let you go next.
Yeah, thank you. And my comments are overall as well, to express appreciation not only to this group, but certainly to ONC and their deliberations. We think that this new version 2, has advanced a lot of very important aspects of what is needed, not only for beneficiaries to get important information, but for many of our programs and healthcare to use these. In particular, are very clear also with some of the measures that are included for equity that will shine a spotlight there, as well as flexibility for having diagnostic information. So I want to express appreciation. We're really very pleased with the direction, and thank you greatly.
Clem?
I want to thank everybody, especially for the additional clinical content, but I'm still a little bit not sure for V2, V3. So in the V2 presentation, we've mentioned other kinds of diagnostic studies, and specifically phenometry was mentioned. That's one of my favorite things, as you've heard before. So now, does that have to come back in V3, or are we done?
You're asking specifically about tonometry, and I didn't see that as an addition.
Is it incorporated in the what we described as kind of other diagnostic studies, and then is it therefore covered?
Good question.
I would love that.
Well, it's not imaging, and it's not a lab, and it is a diagnostic study, right? So, Al, can you comment, or do you need to take that back?
So I think that this is something that we've been looking at a number, like literally in the hundreds of submitted data elements that might qualify as sort of a subset of something else.
But as diagnostic studies.
For diagnostic studies, you could make an argument that something's a subset of a vital sign or other things like that. Because the goal of USCDI is to serve many, many use cases, right? The vast majority or majority or a large number of use cases, because those it's important to enough, so many people. So to say, instead of to add this clinical test or other, this category of sort of air quotes, other diagnostic tests. Definitely, I think that container of clinical tests can include things like tonometry, tabletop tests that are done in clinic, that even diagnostic, some sort of diagnostic procedures can be done. Range of motion measurements, things like that. Those are things that are in that category. By saying only clinical tests and not tonometry and range of motion and specific things, it doesn't say that a system can't be capable of capturing something like tonometry, but it definitely is a container for it.
Yeah, well, I welcome that container because it would open the gates for lots of important clinical data, which is already being transmitted in many contexts, which already has codes to represent it and has places. And in V2, it's been sent just like a lab test. So, but I just maybe a final clarification. Do we have to resubmit the individual things that would be in that container or just assume they're there?
Well,
you've given an example of some of them.
So there's too many examples of things that could be contained by the clinical test data element, and depending on the systems. And I can't speak to how systems generally represent things like that your example of it's ubiquitous to have a system capturing tonometry values. I don't know how that's currently represented. But it would need to be. So, to request all clinical test data from a system, like in the last 6 months from a system, would a system already be able to capture tonometry data and be able to transmit tonometry data now that there's a data element that requires its exchange? I don't know how systems currently are doing that. And maybe Hans or Sasha can comment on that. To say whether or not this actually is what these particular data elements that you're concerned with are already being captured and could be exchanged.
If I can react, it's not necessarily different systems collect different sets more or less depending on the scope. So there are systems that do it and not that may not do it as much or not. It's going to be much more about do the underlying standards, since we're focusing on interoperability, core data for interoperability. It is, do we have consistency on interpretation? So I think the overall USCDI progress is moving clearly in the right direction, as we have stated before. EHI should be the end goal, actually a little bit beyond for other reasons, and we continue to believe that it's not limited to a subset of that, because it's important that for all data, that there is guidance and clarity on what to do it, where there is variability in how the standards can manage it. And certainly there is variability opportunity using FHIR and other standards on how to do it without, if there's no guidance available. So I think that the key if we're looking at that area of how can HIT, not just EHRs, but how can HIT support this, the next step is really going to be is that how can we ensure that the standards that are needed are up to date, and that we can continue to grow it because we have not covered everything yet. So to Clem's earlier statement, after version 3, are we done? I doubt it, because there's still a long way to go to EHI, where we need to have consistency of communication standards to ensure that we can actually consistently interoperate without special effort. So there's still good work to be done, and I don't think we're done after version 3. And this helps us a big step forward in that direction, but we have not resolved yet, which is not USCDI itself, because that's only a set of data elements with some vocabulary references. The hard part from many of those systems that need to be certified or needs to interoperate is the standards, where we now need to make sure is that are we all in sync? There's still some work to be done. Some are well on the way, SDOH, and other areas require a little bit more work. Other ones seemingly would be able to be done by FHIR, but are we all on the same page as to exactly which ones and what resources to use? So I think we still have a bit of work to do
all good work, all necessary. So,
if I could join in, I would complain that all that does is delay it, what you just said. And the tonometry is the name of a test. It's a number and a unit. It's just like a lab test. So is the PR interval and the EKG. These don't need rocket scientists to get them captured. There are already places in both V2 and FHIR to do it. So I'd like to sort of, just that we should just claim that we've got a good big opening in this new container and we use it.
Yeah, but I think that to clarify, what I believe you're asking for, Clem, is sort of a list of specific tests. So we've got the test and the result. That's the container. I think what you're looking for is a list of examples, again, of specific tests and perhaps value sets, as with tonometry, that are expected to be exchangeable if, in fact, a system captures them. I mean, tonometry, you keep bringing it back up because it's a great example. It's very straightforward. Al, I guess the question to you is, would ONC contemplate creating a list of those items that are expected to be transmissible or exchangeable if, in fact, they are captured in a system? Because that would allow greater clarity, I think, for vendors to both know that if these are there, they do need to send them and they do need to receive them if they have a place to put them.
I think that's, I don't want to say impossible task, but I think it's a extremely difficult task to be able to define all of the potential low-ink codes that represent clinical tests that might be needed by all different users in all scenarios. I think that even existing labs, I think there's no question that labs should be represented using low-ink codes, but even that value set is difficult to define. And, low-ink defines a top 2,000 that's not anywhere near all-inclusive, representing lab test codes as a starter set. And that's how we reference it in the interoperability standards advisory, is it's a starter set. And so, we haven't even been able to fully define the necessary value set for lab data, let alone all the other clinical things that have a low-ink code associated with it. So I think that it's not possible, not feasible to be able to define it, because first of all of the low-ink codes in the tests is ever expanding. And so it's difficult or impossible to have your arms around all of the possible data elements that might need to be collected and exchanged.
I really appreciate that response, Al, and I think that, I'm just going to stick a pin in that and say that the 2022 task force in the process of doing the V3 evaluation and providing commentary may want to come back and discuss that. But why don't we use that as a segue, since all the hands are down, to let you go on and discuss the V3 process.
Stephen, I'm sorry, but my hand's been up.
Oh, it was up and it came back down. I'm sorry, Cheryl. Thanks for jumping back in.
Right.
It looked like it came down.
Okay. So just a couple things. First, I wanted to say again, pile on and say thank you about the USCD SDOH data that was added, very important to payers. One of the questions I had was revolving around the conversation about adoption. So, USCDI version 1 is specifically called out in the patient access API. Now, I'm not as familiar because this is all sort of new to payers. How would we then see this progress and the adoption to version 2 apply to that landscape? If someone could, help me understand that a little bit.
Cheryl, I think the question is for me.
yeah.
And we are working on, so we, you know, we set the certification criteria and we set the standard of CDI V1, V2, and then we with a mind that we still might require some additional implementation guidance. And we do intend to have, you know, it looks like we do with all of the certification criteria, the certification companion guides that we publish for each of the criteria, including a reference document that we use for USCDI, how is this implemented? And we do plan on doing that, like how for the patient access API criteria, how does adoption of V2, what does adoption of V2 look like? We plan on doing that. We are working on doing that.
That'll be helpful because I'm trying to figure out how do I gear up for this now so that we can all be ready, and no one's quite 100% sure since on our side this is a new thing for us to deal with. So
right.
I think that discussion would be really helpful, and it seems to generate a lot of discussion with no place to go in the trade group forums that I've been part of as well. So it would be helpful to get some guidance on that. Thanks.
Yep, sure. Okay. I see no hands. Can we go to the next slide now? So just a reminder about the timeline. We have, now that we've published USCDI V2, which will be now considered for SVAP, and we'll go through that process the second half of this year and publish the approved standards, which may or may not include, hopefully will include USCDI V2, but will include all of the standard version updates that have happened over the last year. And we'll publish that, and we'll publish the SVAP in January. We're now in a period of between the final release and the period where USCDI V3 submissions are being accepted. We've actually been in that top middle yellow block since October of last year. But we are now looking for submissions and work on those submissions to progress through the end of September, where those submissions are due in on September 30th, which I think is a Friday. And so once all those submissions come in, we'll go back to the books and see which of those fit some of the priorities that we set, and come out with a new version of draft V3 in January. The work that ONC expects to do between now and September 30th is not only evaluating submissions as they come in, but continuing to engage and work with stakeholders on submissions or submissions that people are considering putting in, and we want to work with stakeholders on it. I note that Grace has already slogged her way through. She'd probably describe it as slogging her way through the OnDeck system to submit about 10 data elements for consideration. We will continue to work with Grace and continue to work with other submitters on making sure that those submissions are complete. And once we get them published, and Grace, to one of your questions is, we need to publish those data elements that at least are not duplicate data elements. We need to publish those data elements so that anybody can go in and review those data elements and make comments on, or maybe somebody else is working on some other component of that data element. Maybe they have other testing going on a data element that's the same or similar, so that they can collaborate and improve that submission to demonstrate more applicability or more implementation or more standardization or lower burdens to implementation. Any of those things are favorable to get something advanced into the next version of USCDI. One of the questions is, how do we connect people working on some of the same things, and getting that information out in the USCDI onto the OnDeck system is one of the key ways that we can do it. And then making particular highlights, on this task force meeting, in the high tech meeting, in other public fora, to say, hey, there's this thing that needs work. It's not quite mature enough, but it needs work. Who wants in, sort of thing. There's a lot of different ways of advancing that connectivity to get some of these things considered for addition.
Al, one of the things that we discussed in our recommendations was the idea of a routine review and re-leveling process for submitted data elements based on all of the available comments, et cetera. I don't believe that you have re-leveled anything since the beginning of this year. Is there a thought that re-leveling process will occur as part of the review after the September deadline?
I expect that review to happen before the September deadline and then after the September deadline as well. So, especially given the fact, and this is a spoiler alert, we have also published some updated prioritization criteria, which may lead us to go back and look at some things that might have actually fallen into those prioritization criteria, but we hadn't considered it before. So we do expect an ongoing, I would say, sort of a baseline review process. Some of that's guided by particular stakeholder input when they reach out to ONC, either through UNDEC or through direct contact, to say, like, hey, we really think this warrants some additional work, and we can work on that and consider adding that. You know, we consider releveling that based on ongoing work or new findings or new collaborations to go through and review those and get those bumped up to level 2 for consideration for the next version.
Got it. Mark has his hand up.
Yeah, thanks. So Al, sort of building on a couple of comments that you just made, one of the recommendations from the task force and then the HITAC to the national coordinator was about identifying gaps, priorities where there's a need, but the submissions aren't quite meeting ONC's identification of the need. And I'm wondering what ONC is planning to do around that particular area, that particular recommendation.
Sorry, I was coughing and on mute. So there's a couple different things that we can do, Mark, to address those areas. The gaps are our data elements that don't currently exist, didn't exist in Common Clinical Dataset, didn't exist in USCDI version 1 or now version 2. They're looking at USCDI V2. It looks more complete. There's not as many clear gaps, but there are people that would disagree. ONC can highlight some of those areas that we think, warrant some additional development and based on, these new priorities, we think ought to be worked on by, the community. The focus can be sort of self-driven. If you've submitted something that you think needs additional work or might fit into ONC's priorities, then, that can be brought up in any number of different forms. I can't say specifically that we're going to say this thing needs more work, everybody get going on it, but that's one possible avenue for advancement.
Well, at least for me, when we talked about that recommendation, that was one of the ways in which I was hoping ONC would provide some leadership, was to actually name some of the things that were needed if they weren't already there. You mentioned the publication of prioritization, are you referring to what I found, at least in the standards bulletin towards the end?
Yeah.
Okay. So I just a comment then that those five priorities look pretty generic and to me, and similar to what we've already seen. So, additions, modest standards.
We added a couple, Mark. I'm going to cover that in a second.
Okay, very good.
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead, Al?
Okay. Next slide. The first part of this is the prioritization criteria that we use to come up in version two, and these will continue. We really feel like we can't, for the sake of implementation burden, developmental burden, and then also the burden on providers who have to implement that and actually be one of the responsible parties for collecting all this information. We aren't likely to have massive changes in USCDI because the incremental work that is needed to do these updates, voluntary though they may be, is in many cases too difficult to do on a regular basis, and so we are looking for data elements that that do fill these gaps have addressed specific data needs that are not part of USCDI V2. They have to be reasonable as far as and Hans keeps pressing on this issue, is that there is a significant, in some cases there is a significant implementation to do work to advance the standards or implementation guidance that would be needed to adopt changes in USCDI version any. And then looking at the total aggregate lift, all of these things are going to continue. We can't, even though we're focusing on some specific areas, we still can't say we're looking to add there's 100 new data elements that address one of these specific new criteria that we're likely to add. It's still under that. We have to operate under this constraint of reasonable incremental change, and so those are going to continue because we have as evidenced by our incorporation of SDOH and the SDOH and the SOGI of data elements, demonstrating our interest in improving data for the purposes of addressing equity and underserved stakeholders. We want to continue to do that. Look where data can mitigate these inequities and disparities. I think that these two things addressed, these two new groups of data address some underserved stakeholders. And then we are also looking for specific data elements that aren't part of USCDI right now that would improve public health reporting, investigation, and emergency response. And that's so specifically data elements that are there are data elements out there that could advance some of these issues, and we feel like that those are some specific areas that ought to be focused on, and we certainly can call them some of these specifically out either through direct engagement with stakeholders or by various communication methods that we have, but what we're saying is that work in these areas will pay attention to work in these particular prioritization areas where it works to improve USCDI for those purposes.
Al, just a comment. You got a lot of praise, you and the team, earlier for what's in V2, but I think similar praise is warranted for your calling out these priority areas very much in line with our earlier suggestions. So thank you for that.
Yeah, sure.
Amen.
All right. So I think, I don't know if I have another slide, and we're getting close.
Yeah,
to
one more.
So right now, so this is, we're in this V3 submission process. We're in the window. It's going to continue through September 30th. We are looking for stakeholders to do one of a number of different things, not just go to OnDeck and submit. In the context of these new and existing prioritization criteria, looking through the OnDeck system, as Grace has tried to do, to look through for things that might already meet their needs, not part of USCDI, that just need some additional work, collaboration, additional. and so look at USCDI in its current form, see what might be missing, see what's already been worked on, and work to advance those particular data elements. In the absence of those data elements that could merit some additional work or collaboration, then submitting new data elements through the OnDeck, whether it's in response to their own particular needs, something that that ONC has focused on, or that other stakeholders have submitted already, and then also not just working with other stakeholders, but also working with ONC, like how do we make our submissions better, or how do we make this other person's submissions better. And we expect for all of those things to be happening at a pretty good clip between now and the end of September. And I think that's it. We're going to just touch on, and I don't think we're going to get into the phase three work because we're almost out of time. But those are some things that we expect, we hope will happen over the next couple months. And looking forward to the work. There was a question.
Well, why don't we?
Before we do, there was a question that Peter Gunter had asked about finding data elements that didn't make it as part of USCDI V2. Peter, and for everybody else, we have the USCDI homepage. We have five different tabs across the top of that page. One is USCDI V1, which is the current existing regulatory version of USCDI. USCDI V2 as recently published, but also the level 2, level 1, and comment tabs are the content that was submitted but did not make it into USCDI version 2. We're very shortly, like literally within the next couple of days, we're working to implement an improved search function so that you can go in and type in a keyword, even a misspelled keyword, and find something that's already in USCDI that might meet your needs or might at least, you know, trigger your imagination.
All right, so let's go to public comment now. Thank you, Peter, for asking that question.
Stephen and Al. Operator, can we open up the line for public comment?
Yes. If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1, and a confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment as we poll for comments.
While we're waiting, we do have a slide coming up that has our upcoming schedule of meetings, but just so everyone is aware, we are meeting next Tuesday, the 27th of July at 10:30 Eastern Time. Operator, do we have any comments?
There are no public comments.
Okay, thank you. Stephen?
Thank you. Thank you so much. So, Al, I did want to come back to ask a question. You know, we've suggested a number of times that the task force that will likely be rechartered next year and potentially future years to look at the additional versions. And And in your slide 21, you know, there is again the red box clarifying that HITACH is going to be doing a review of version 3. Is that a fair statement that there will almost certainly be a US CDI 2022 task force that will be engaged to do that work?
I would guess that's the case. You know, because we USCDI is you know, the part of the structure of USCDI is to look for feedback, and you know, we clearly use HITACH regularly to get specific feedback on a lot of things that we do. So I do expect it. I can't promise it. But I would expect that we look for formal feedback from the HITACH going forward.
Great, thank you. All right, so again, looking ahead to the remainder of our time together for this 2021 task force, if we can go on to the next slide, or maybe it's going back actually. Let's go back to slide 24 here. Back one more. Yeah. So again, just a reminder of where we've been and where we're going. We've been through our tasks 1 and 2. We're working on our task 3. We've started some of that work, and we have to really till the end of August to get through this work. On the next slide, you see the meetings that we have on the calendar. These dates were selected to avoid major competing industry meetings that I think many people will be involved in, and also to give us some time to get the work done in between meetings. But next week, as you've heard, we are going to come back and focus on SDOH and specifically meet with some of the leaders of the Gravity Project beyond Mark, who we've had the pleasure of having with us all along. And I think the idea there, Mark, just as you and your team prep for that meeting, is really first to hear from Gravity, their response to the changes that were included in V2, and then talk really specifically about what priorities Gravity or other SDOH stakeholders may have related to V3 and future versions of USCDI, because the whole purpose of this discussion is really to see if there's a need for our task force to weigh in with recommendations. I would think that those recommendations should be informed by the people who've been living and breathing this for the past couple of years. For the subsequent meetings, you'll recall that we have our Google Docs where we have captured topics for discussion from previous meetings, and we want to work our way through those. I have also made outreach to most of the fire accelerator teams beyond Gravity, and some of them have responded. And I've scheduled some pre-meetings with some of those folks, to see if there are issues that would benefit from discussion here at the task force. Again, our number of remaining meetings is short, but I invite others of you, if there are areas that you think are really important with regard to V3 priorities that you believe we should discuss here, please let me know and Leslie, so that we can discuss getting those on the agenda. So we are at time. Again, I want to thank all of you for your participation today, and look forward to meeting with everyone again next week to further dive into social determinants of health. Have a great day.
Thanks so much.